We
are.
We
are.
We are cultivate.
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 We are cultivate.
Hello and welcome to Ye Olde Crime, where we discuss the funny, strange, and obscure crimes of yesteryear. I'm your host, Lindsay Valenti, and with me is my sister and co-host, Maddie Stengel.
Hello!
Well, howdy ho there.
Hey there, hi there, ho there, whoa there. Or, Dad's favorite, ahoy hoy.
Yes.
Shout out to you, Dad.
Love you, Dad. I was actually early with these notes, mainly because I wrote them while I was on vacation. So,
yeah, but I mean, you still writing it when you're on vacation means it's something you love. So,
yeah. And it was something that I planned to do on vacation anyway. So I'm proud of myself for sticking with it.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, major kudos. I'm excited for this. If this episode kept you drawn in during your week of relaxing. It's got to be good.
This is actually a good one. I'm excited for this one. Eee. All right. So this week, we are going to be discussing The Witch of St. Omer. It is not what you were thinking. I guarantee it. Information was pulled from the following sources. A 2023 Random Times article by Leo S. 2021 Michael Clean article. 2019 Chicagoland Haunts Medium article by Heidi E. Carpenter. 2018 Only in Your State article by Elizabeth Crozier. 2006 Legends and Lore of Coles County, Illinois by Michael Clean. Atlas Obscura. 4 Find a Grave links. U.S. Ghost Adventures. And Wikipedia.
Nice.
And links to all of these articles will be included in the show notes.
Honestly, those articles just made me even more curious.
Yeah.
Like, you really bounced around.
I did.
If you want a playlist of all our episodes on YouTube, click the link in our show notes or in our link tree and subscribe today for not only a list of our full catalog, but a separate list as well, just of our Can You Crack the Cramp Word segments.
The last place I would expect to find anything about witches is in the Midwest. So imagine my surprise when I stumbled upon a story of a supposed witch that took place in a little township in Illinois, of all places.
Yeah. Okay, just so people know too, why would you be surprised that about a witchcraft case in the Midwest for our international listeners?
Because it's so far removed from any sort of water-bound transport. Like, it makes sense that there were a lot of witch cases on the coast because of people coming from England and, you know, Europe and all that stuff. And
overpopulation, rumors, likely racism, religious persecution, that kind of thing.
It just seems so bizarre and nonsensical that it would migrate its way into the middle of the United States.
Like right when we were all starting to settle too, because that's another part of that is it was still primarily wild land.
Yeah, it was all wild country.
Europeans quote unquote on the land, whether or not the locals knew. But it's not like you're claiming an indigenous person was a witch. Because they probably did think they were all witches.
They probably did. This is something completely different. So that's part of why I'm just like, what? Like, really?
Well, thank you. I just wanted to say that because I feel like some of our listeners in like the UK and stuff, they'd be like, why are you surprised that there was a witchcraft case in conservative Midwest?
And that's why.
It wasn't conservative then. It wasn't really anything.
No.
It just was.
It was just death grass everywhere.
Just death grass.
So Ashmore Township, which as of 2020 is home to a population of around 1,200 people, is one of 12 townships in Coles County in the southeastern region of the state of Illinois.
Oh, okay.
For being such a small township, it measures 53.69 square miles, or 139.1 square kilometers, and it's also home to 10 cemeteries.
Ooh, yeah, that was a settlement township.
Yep.
For sure.
Yep. Of which one is that of St. Omer, which is located in the ghost town of Omer.
Oh, so it's a separate town.
So Omer was a settlement, and yep. St. Omer was the name of the cemetery of this settlement within this township.
Okay, so it's an abandoned settlement within a township.
Yes.
Got it. Sorry. I was like, is this little thing like just outside of those squares?
It's in a pocket of the squares.
Yeah.
It is a pocket square in the squares.
It's a pocket square. A haunted pocket square.
According to a newsletter published in 2006 by Michael Kleene, quote, St. Omer, named after a 7th century French saint who was also known as Audomarus, was officially founded in 1852, although it had been called Cutler's Settlement since 1834, end quote.
Do we know what his, like, sainthood symbol is?
Good question.
What did he do? Did he beat up a bunch of snakes? Did he feed children? Was he just a man? A white man?
So according to Oxford Reference, for St. Omer, it says on 6th September 649 or 651, Audomer, or Omer, Bishop of Therouan, received 12 estates, including Cithou, where he established 3 missionaries who came from Austrasia and spoke the local language. I don't know how to pronounce that. So he established missionaries. So it's named after a saint that established 3 different missionaries.
Yeah, like forever ago. He died in 670.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Random.
Yeah, because I was just like, normally, you know, it's for some reason, like, he did get rid of snakes. And they're like, look at all this death grass. Let's name it after the guy who killed snakes.
Yeah.
Must have just been a fan favorite, you know?
Yeah. Someone was fangirling over him and they're like, you know what? I'm going to name this town after this guy.
Yep.
Maybe it was someone who was like hoping to bring God's will and God's work.
I was just going to say, maybe it was somebody who wanted to do a missionary kind of thing. Establish.
Maybe.
Because if that's all he did, then he's like, me too. And then he died and it didn't work.
Yeah. But. So, you know how I said it was previously named Cutler Settlement?
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it was named after a man.
So the settler in question, John Cutler, was an Ohioan who decided to settle the land. And the Barnes family, who are part of the legend, would become the first settlers of St. Omer after it was renamed in 1852.
Man, this is crazy to me that it's 1852. Like, this is so late in the game of witch hunts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 400 years.
That's why I was like, what is happening here?
Yeah.
So, the town of St. Omer was small in the 1800s, home to around 50 families at the height of its popularity. And the small community became even smaller by the end of the 1880s, consisting of just 6 houses, a store, blacksmith, and a post office.
Okay.
Residents eventually abandoned the town altogether to move to nearby Ashmore, where a new train line had been built. And this was pretty common in areas of the Midwest. Like, you would have all these tiny little settlements that would eventually become ghost towns as people moved closer to areas that were near the railroad, because there was more economic growth, there was more job opportunities.
Well, and I think some of the people that wanted to settle, that was their end goal. They always wanted to be back in the city. They just wanted to have a little more land and a say.
Well, and if you're in the Midwest, so much of what you need is brought in via railroad. Mm-hmm. So you would naturally be more inclined to be living next to that. So you're not having to travel so far to a town that has a railroad.
Yep.
To pick up what you need and then go back home. So it made sense.
As somebody who DoorDashes, I would have a hard time. I would have a really hard time in that era.
You're like, I need to move to Ashmore. I can't live here.
It's like, where are ye old drones?
Yeah.
To bring me my lime and wood.
Yep. So land owned by the Barnes family in St. Omer was once home to a church and schoolhouse up until 1893, but nothing of either building remains today.
Yeah.
And since the town's abandonment, all that remains is the cemetery where so many of its former residents are interred.
Yeah.
Enter our witch. So now we're going to dive into the history of the person in question.
It's actually the first person that ever contracted meningitis.
My head is so hot.
She's not a witch. She's patient zero.
Yeah. The witch in question is a young woman named Caroline Prather Barnes, who was born on January 23rd, 1858, to parents William and Alia Emmeline Prather in nearby Edgar, Illinois.
What incredible names.
Oh, just wait. She was one of 11 children.
Jeez.
And was fourth in the birth order behind, from oldest to youngest, her sister, Barilla, who was born in 1850.
Okay.
Sisters Sarah Elizabeth, who was born in 1852.
Boring.
Sister Mary L., who was born in 1854.
Boring.
Brother Luke in 1856. Sister Eliza Jane, who was born in 1859.
Boring.
Sister Dora Alice, who was born in 1862. Sister Anna Laura, who was born in 1864. Brother William Edward, who was born in 1866. Sister Cora Ella, born in 1869. And brother John S., born in 1872.
I mean, that's the plainest one.
Fun fact. Her mother, Alia, was 22 when she first started having children and was 44 when she stopped.
Horrific. Horrific. 20 years of your life, birthing and breastfeeding.
Yep.
Oh my God. There was no ye olde formula. And I'm sure if you have 11 children, you also can't afford a wet nurse.
No. You are the wet nurse.
You are all of the things.
And apparently in the case of Alia, you are perpetually the wet nurse. Like just constantly gross. Yeah.
Oh, no, thank God. You. As soon as you were done, your body would be like, we can rest.
We need all the water. All of our nutrients and hydration have been sucked dry from our body. So I don't have much information on Caroline's childhood, but at some point she married a young man named Marcus Randolph Barnes, who was born on January 14th, 1857, to parents Granville Anderson and Sarah Ann Barnes.
Jeez, Granville.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
He was the third of six children, of which half were boys. So his siblings, from oldest to youngest, include Sevilla, born 1850, Elizabeth Ann, born 1863, William David, born 1863, Joseph Enos, born 1866, and an infant daughter who passed on April 23rd, 1870. I'm not sure how old she was at the time of her death, and no birth date is listed on her tombstone. So I'm assuming she died very quickly in infancy.
Yeah.
So a news article is included on his Find a Grave page about Marcus, and it reads as follows. Quote, a man named Barnes, who was operating a sawmill in Ashmore, last Friday fell across the log and had both arms severed, one at the wrist and the other near the elbow. He was promptly attended by doctors Robertson and Steele of Ashmore, but has since died of his injuries, end quote.
Yeah, he would have bled out really fast.
Yeah.
Like, really fast. Losing to your wrist, there's a major artery there, and by your elbow, it'd be the same. Mm-hmm. Horrific. How?
Yeah.
God, that had to have happened so many times. Like,
oh, yeah.
Really?
Ugh, yeah. Marcus was just 24 years old when he passed away on December 6, 1881.
Oh my God.
Leaving Caroline to raise their two daughters on her own. Nina, who was born on September 24th, 1879, and Minnie Olive, who was born on August 9th, 1881.
I'm sorry, that is the cutest little name. Minnie Olive?
Yeah, I know. It's super cute. The girls were aged 2 and 3 months when they lost their father.
She, man, she's had a hard time thus far. And I know it's only going to get worse. So
yeah. As if this wasn't sad enough, Caroline herself passed away just 2 months later in February of 1882. And it's noted that she died of pneumonia. Her official date of death has been disputed, with it unclear on if it was February 26th or the 28th.
That's a big difference. 3 days.
3 days, yeah, that's... Other than her bad luck in passing away so young at the age of 24, nothing really points to or explains why she is a supposed witch.
Mm-hmm.
That's where her and her husband's grave marker comes in.
Oh.
The couple are interred together at St. Omer Cemetery under an unusual and unique grave marker. The headstone is crafted as an orb, sitting atop a base of stacked logs reminiscent of a funeral pyre.
Oh.
Fun fact, Marcus and Caroline are just 2 of 4 people that are buried under the monument. In addition to the couple, Marcus's parents, Granville and Sarah, are also buried in the same plot, with Sarah passing away first on July 20th, 1877.
Huh.
His mom passed 5 years before the rest of them, so she was the first one. So the headstone reads as follows. On one side of the orb, it says Barnes, while the other side reads, quote, Marcus R. Barnes, born January 14th, 1857, died December 6th, 1881. Caroline, his wife, born January 23rd, 1858, died February 31st, 1882.
Yeah, because that's a thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, notice anything unusual about that last one?
That it's not a real
Yeah, February 31st is a date that doesn't exist, which adds to the local lore surrounding Caroline herself. Many say that the date was made up so that her ghost could never return, as it's believed that witches came back once a year on their death date.
Interesting. Then yeah. I mean, that's clever, if you believed it.
Yeah, exactly. According to Michael Clean's article, quote, the Barnes family monument is difficult to describe. Some say it looks like a crystal ball mounted on a pyre. Conventionally, orbs in cemetery art represent faith, and logs, or tree trunks, are fairly common imagery representing growth and enduring life, end quote. It's said that Caroline was put to death for practicing witchcraft, and that no pictures can be taken of her monument on film, although it seems to appear just fine when taken digitally.
Huh.
They don't have witchcraft for that.
They haven't gotten the update yet.
No. Additionally, it is said to glow on moonless nights, and the monument itself faces north and south, which is counter to the east and west orientation that most headstones face.
Interesting. Yes, it's like it's all slightly off to really throw off the spirit.
Another rumor suggests that she was accused of being a witch and when she wouldn't die via hanging or burning, depending on who is telling the story, the residents of Saint-Omer buried her alive.
Oh my God.
Of course, we can use logic in this instance to think that perhaps, instead of her death being some result of the supernatural, the date could have simply been mistaken as it was being carved into the monument. And for such an expensive and unique piece, the cost to fix the error would have likely been financially prohibitive. Yeah. Not to mention that the remaining family had already abandoned the small town by the time of Caroline's passing.
Right.
They'd all moved to Ashmore.
Yeah, they're not there and they don't want to go back.
Yeah. This theory has some merit, as the name of her father-in-law, Granville, who passed away just a few days after Caroline herself on March 2nd of 1882, is misspelled on the monument.
Hmm.
So his name is also spelled wrong.
Yeah, they were trying to do something. They were trying to do some trickery.
Yeah. Given that the legend and lore around a witch in their midst has been a source of real contention for the locals, the monument has seen quite a bit of vandalism over the years. As a result, the trustees of the cemetery have had to reset the stone several times after the monument was knocked over. It's also entirely possible that the last time it was put to rights, the direction the monument was facing had been done incorrectly, whether on purpose or as a simple accident. So it's entirely possible that the orb itself was placed incorrectly, and that's why it's facing a different direction than is typical. I mean, it's a heavy stone.
Yeah, no, all of this is definitely feasible, but because there are so many of them, I have a hard time thinking this was anything but a planned and intentional thing.
Yeah.
There's too many of them for it to be like that many fuck ups. Like, otherwise, that town, there's a reason why that town couldn't survive.
Yeah. And yet, the story of Caroline, the Saint-Omer witch, has persisted to this day. As recent as 2003, a Lakeland college student named Maria Kelly told local paper the Coles County Leader, quote, "They tried to kill Caroline by hanging her, but that didn't kill her, so they buried her alive. When they went back to see if she was dead, they said she was gone. That's why people say she was a witch," end quote.
Because she fought her way out of the grave and ran for her life?
I guess.
Nope, out of there.
Whether you choose to believe or not, Coles County residents have either embraced or shunned the story. Those that choose to embrace it have left offerings in the form of coins or flowers at, on, or near the monument. Others, well, we've already discussed how they feel about it. While some say that secret cult rituals are performed there in the dead of night, which can kind of be verified given that the orb portion of the monument has been seen covered in melted white candle wax on several occasions.
Yeah. I mean, if it's a witch artifact, you might attract witches.
Yeah.
You know, like.
As far as Saint-Omer Cemetery goes, in addition to Caroline and her husband, it's home to some 413 souls and has become famous enough that it's found its way into local papers and national books alike. And in case you're curious about the two Barnes girls, I couldn't find out who raised them after they were orphaned, but I can tell you that Nina went on to get married at the age of 18 to a man named Charles Hammerly Halleck in 1897. He was 2 years her senior at the time they married, and the pair had two children together, Muriel in 1900 and Irma Charlene in 1903.
Man.
Nina would unfortunately pass away early in life at the age of 30 on February 12, 1910. I'm not sure how she passed, but it's entirely possible that she passed from illness.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I feel like there was a fever during that time.
Yeah. She was laid to rest at Ashmore Cemetery in Coles County, not far from where her parents are buried. daughter, Minnie Olive, would marry a man named Charles William Kearns in 1899 when she was 18 and he was 21. The couple had three children together, Gladys in 1901, William in 1905, and Wayne in 1918. Minnie's husband passed away at the age of 53 in 1931, and Minnie herself passed away on May 31st, 1971, at the age of 89, and is buried at the same cemetery as her parents.
She's the oldest ever in her line.
Mm-hmm.
By like 30 years, at least. Mm-hmm. How weird would that be, just like knowing you've outaged everyone?
Yeah. And that's Caroline Barnes, the witch of St. Omer.
Funny. The witch that like wasn't, but was?
Yeah. Like,
we don't actually know why.
Like, it's documented that she died of pneumonia. But
what I bet probably happened was she was sick and got other people sick. And then that's why she was a witch, because she like cursed everybody before she died.
Something. I don't know.
You know, because I mean, if you have pneumonia that with those fevers, I bet you're hallucinating up a storm.
Yep. I'm sure a lot of it had to do with, I'm sure a lot of the lore started after their headstone was put into place.
Absolutely.
1,000%. I find it a tiny bit morbid that the bottom part of the monument is like the pile of wood, considering that Marcus lost his arms in the sawmill and like bled out.
Yep. And she theoretically in one option was burned at the stake and failed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if that was true and they did that, that's fucked.
Super fucked. Yeah. So it's very much kind of a fun witch story. And
yeah,
I just thought, like,
who were the mean ones? And who, yeah, who were the good people? Like,
yeah, it was just, it was a fun story. It was fun to research. Obviously, mm-hmm, there wasn't a whole lot of information, but at the same time, like, yeah, it was fun to dive into the different characters of the story.
You can go down a million rabbit holes to think of what that was like.
Yeah.
Looking for more content? You can find us online at yieldcrimepodcast.com. If you'd like to see pictures from this week's episode, not to mention bonus content and funny memes, make sure to follow us on Twitter at yieldcrimepod, and on Facebook and Instagram at Yield Crime Podcast. On TikTok, of course you are. Follow us at Yield Crime Podcast.
Do you find true crime podcasts too murdery?
Do you hate true crime altogether?
Has that pesky day job kept you from the life of crime you've been dreaming of?
Do you breathe oxygen?
If you've answered yes to any of these questions, then we have the podcast for you.
Live, Laugh, Larceny, a true petty crime podcast, brings the drama to dumb criminal stories, presenting each crime as a fully produced short story.
Our variety show podcast has it all. Sound effects, parody songs, terrible reenactments, and did we mention drama?
Join us, Amanda and Trevin, each Wednesday as we share our dreadful dilemmas, killer facts, and then jump into the sick and twisted world of petty crimes.
We're talking old people fights, scorned lovers, and people solving their problems with feces.
That's enough with the listing. Let's roll with the clip.
Thank you all for joining us today as we announce the gender of our little peanut,
Cheryl shouted out.
I'm not sure what exactly Anthony came up with for this reveal, but he has told me to warn you all to please step back and plug your ears. So if you'll all join me in a countdown, 3, 2, 1.
It was at that moment, a gigantic explosion erupted from the ground below at the quarry, releasing immense amounts of pressure out into the air. The boom sent chunks of earth flying and panic to spread throughout the event. Shockwaves rattled the foundation in which guests stood and didn't stop there. Traveling at rapid speed, cracks in the earth began to spread throughout a 20-mile radius, causing pictures to fall off of nearby home walls and turning tap water a murky brown color. You can find Live, Laugh, Larceny on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Bye.
See ya.
This month's podcast plug is the Live, Laugh, Larceny podcast, hosted by two longtime friends, Amanda and Trevin. Live, Laugh, Larceny sets out to change everything you know about true crime and comedy podcasts. They bring you small-time petty crimes in an overly dramatic tone. So if you've ever felt that true crime podcasts were a little too murdery, or you think that having your phone stolen is the worst thing that could ever happen to a person, come and get petty. And we will have link to their show in the show notes. And this is a question from Carrie Ann that, like, we got a while ago. But I felt like because Easter's around the corner, it's okay for me to put it in here. So she wants to know, what is your top 10 favorite holiday movies to binge? Obviously, it's not just Easter, but, like, not that I binge any sort of Easter holiday movies, but... You know me, I'm all about the Passion of the Christ. Just kidding. Number Top one 10 and through 10.
Holiday movies. This is going to be awful, but we don't, there's only one that our family watches religiously every year. And that's A Christmas Story. So that would be my number one, I suppose. And then second one. I mean, I really like the classic Christmas films, like The Miracle on 34th Street. I think that's what it's called. And It's a Wonderful Life is a classic too, but it's very dark. So you need to make sure that you're like on an up for that. We didn't really watch the National Lampoon ones. So I don't know. They're funny, but it's not something I gravitate to. Trying to think of other holidays. No.
Can't think of any.
I can't. Like, I'm sure I'll think of something like this afternoon.
Yeah.
I'll shout it into the void. But what about you?
Obviously, having children, Thomas and I have kind of blended our childhood films together.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
I'm not ranking these. There's just, I'm just listing off 10. So Elf is a big one in our house. Muppet Christmas Carol.
That's a good one. That's a good classic.
That's the one that Thomas used to watch every year. We watch A Nightmare Before Christmas and Hocus Pocus when it's Halloween. We watch The Grinch. So we watch the Jim Carrey one.
Okay, I was going to say there's a lot of them.
And then we also watch... the most recent one where Benedict Cumberbatch was the voice of the Grinch. It's the one by Chris Meledandri. Illumination. The guy that does like Despicable Me and stuff.
Despicable Me.
So that one. Mm-hmm. Yep. I used to really like Love Actually, but then it just kind of pisses me off now.
Yeah.
As I'm
older.
You know,
I thought briefly about Love Actually and I was like, but when was the last time I really actually watched it?
Yeah, I haven't watched it in a long time just because it makes me angry. Although parts of it are very funny, like
a lot of the 90s ones that I used to really, really enjoy, I can't stand now because I'm like, wow,
I know
this was cool then.
It's problematic now. We always watch National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. It's not really my fave. I'll watch it, but it's not like I won't seek it out.
It's like a cooking movie where like you're cooking and people are watching it. Is Die Hard one of them?
No. Die Hard isn't one of them.
Independence Day.
I'm trying to think of Halloween ones that we've watched that we kind of watch on a regular basis.
Yeah, there really isn't.
I feel like there were some other ones we kind of watched this year. There was one with... It just came out last year, I think, and it had Adam Sandler in it, and like his character just like scares all the time, something like that. And then
I just remembered some of my favorite ones were the Chuck Jones illustrated Bugs Bunny stuff, because I remember Chuck Jones did The Grinch. And that's like my favorite animation style. I loved the way he drew.
Yeah, I like that one too. I'm going
like, to put that on my brushable, list. Brushable, cute.
Cindy Lou Who, was just
adorable. Like it was just a really nice, like that's one where I would stop and sit down and watch instead of multitask. Like I always do.
I mean, I suppose growing up, we always watched when we happened to catch them, like the claymation, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Frosty the Snowman. Yeah.
I don't think our parents really liked them though.
We didn't watch a lot of the Peanuts ones, like It's Christmas, Charlie Brown, or
The Great Pumpkin.
Wasn't there one with Thanksgiving too? I can't remember, but I'm sure there was. We've seen those. It's not something that we're like, oh, we have to make sure that we watch this every year, but we'll watch them if like they're on, you know? Yeah. So that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah.
It's a lot more kid focused stuff.
That makes sense.
Thanks, Carrie-Anne. I'm sorry that our answers are probably lackadaisical for this one. Yeah. But not a whole lot of must-watches in our household. Yeah,
I would agree.
What's something good you'd like to share?
I don't know if I mentioned this before, but we secured our new home.
You did.
And I did an overhaul of kind of cleaning up and getting rid of some stuff this past week, just in kind of preparation of starting to pack and get everything ready. And I got just a lot done, and I feel a lot better about my house in general. You know how it gets when all it takes is one pile in the corner, and then that one pile turns into two or three, and another pile in another room, and whether you intend to or not. And then you surface level clean and you don't deep clean. I did a whole overhaul from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Damn.
Yeah. But I love it. I love doing stuff like that. And if I could have had the whole week to do it, I would have been in hog heaven. I don't know what it is about that type of cleaning and organization that just really makes my heart happy. So my body hurts now, but I'm really glad I did it.
Yeah. My goal is to try to get all of those kind of piles of things that you never really go through. You just kind of accept that they're there. Get rid of all of those before the end of May when my friends come to visit. So that's my goal.
And tackling one pile at a time is a lot easier than dedicating a day to do it. Because you can always convince yourself to not do a day, but can you convince yourself to skip looking at a pile?
Yeah. Like if you just dedicate an hour or two to something every day, then you can get it done. But
absolutely.
Yeah. Cool.
Shout out to all of our ADHD or executive dysfunction girlies. Same.
I'll say something similar for my something good. Before we went on our vacation, it was time to deep clean Charlie's enclosure. I do it every 3 months just to make sure that his substrate gets replaced on a regular basis, and just to kind of scrub down all of the stuff in his enclosure and kind of move stuff around so he can be visually stimulated, you know?
Yeah. And Charlie is a snake, for those of you that don't know.
Yeah, he's my ball python. And so I did that the night before we left. So I did it Sunday night. And I have this spray that I use where I take, it's reptile safe spray, something like that. And I use a little toothbrush to clean everything off. Yep. And then I rinse it off and took all the substrate out and vacuumed it and wiped it down. And so now I moved things around a little bit in his enclosure. It's not wow, everything's in a completely new space, because his heat pad is on one side of the enclosure, and that's where his hide goes. so I can't move his hide. But
yeah,
I move some of the other things around. And it's just, it warms the cockles of my heart when I do something like this and I put him in back in his enclosure. And he's just like, oh, wow, what's this? What's that? And yes, he is a snake. I get it. I don't know what his attention span is or how, what his memory looks like, but it just, it feels good after you have spent an hour deep cleaning an enclosure for your pet.
To see your pet actually enjoy it.
Yeah. To see that they appreciate the work you put in. So that was nice. And I'm glad that I did it before we were gone for several days, because I would have been,
it would have been worse
thinking about it. And it was very overdue at that point. The mulch that I put in there was, it needed to be replaced. So, yeah. Go cleaning.
Go cleaning.
All right. Shall we?
Yep.
If you're interested in ad-free content, consider supporting us with a one-time donation either over on Buy Me a Coffee or our Venmo page, both of which are in our link tree and in the show notes.
A great way to support the show, if you want to help us out but you can't do so financially, is to leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Good Pods, Podcast Addict, and or Audible.
Got something you want to say? Shoot us an email over at yieldcrimepodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your story ideas, see any gifts you send our way, or if you just want to say hello. We're pretty friendly. Speaking of friendly, if you'd like to have real-time conversations with us, consider joining our Discord over at the Cultivate Network. You can chat with us over at the Old Crimers Cubby or catch up with any of the other great creators that are part of the Cultivate family of podcasts. Just click the link in our show notes or over on our link tree to get started today.
And just as a reminder, our TeePublic shop has a sale this month. We just are finishing up the March 6th through the 10th sale that we had, which was 35% off. And the next one is coming up March 20th through the 24th. We do have some new designs. They were voted on Instagram. So I have 4 new ones that I'm going to put up. And then I'm going to put polls up for the remaining 8 designs for people to vote on them. And they will be up in time for the final sale of the month.
Nice.
Make sure you head over to our Instagram to vote on your favorites. Mm-hmm. And on that note, as always, I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Madison.
And we'll see you next time with another tale
as old as crime.